This is episode 4, Superhero Speak. This one's a little different. It's our Iron Man special. We recorded it in two parts. The first half is us getting together, talking about the previews and what we've read online and what we thought the movie was going to be. The second half of the episode is our reaction after seeing the movie. Listen to it. Let us know if you agree with our review of the movie. And here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Superhero Speaks. I am your con man, Dave.
And I am Ben, also known as Beardiac.
And I'm John, just John.
Is that like just Jack?
No.
No jazz hands?
No. Not today.
I don't think so. Yeah. So, Iron Man 3, moving on.
Iron Man 3, yes. Looking at the trailers this time around, I'm really excited for this one. I was excited for 2, but it was a little bit of a disappointment. So this one looks like it's going to be better.
Yeah, definitely room to improve there. I enjoyed Iron Man 2 in general. It was a decent story. But unfortunately, there were some gaps there and some holes that didn't work for it. And it's unfortunate because I like Jon Favreau. I think his writing and directorial career has been great so far, and I'd like to see him keep going with it. But hopefully this doesn't create a bad mark on his record.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the villain, Whiplash, was a little weak, I think, in that one. The plot of, you stole my idea, revenge, just didn't seem like a great
It didn't hold a lot of water. It wasn't strong enough. I mean, I got it, but at the same time, it was weak. It was a weak character. And Hammer was kind of flat.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What did you think, John?
I think that the body count must have been extremely high, considering they didn't, evacuate the area before all the bombs and the drones went off and all that. So, but he saved Gwyneth Paltrow, so that's what matters.
Yeah,
of course.
That's who's important to him.
So it'll be hard to beat the body count, the supposed body count, but otherwise, it was weak. There was no real push by the main protagonist to really, do anything. And it suffered from like the James Bond thing, right? You don't really see many Russian, mob types who are geniuses and come up with a new power source that could, power the world. So
it is rare.
Yeah. So, little things like that. And the other thing was his relationship with Pepper Potts. You didn't really see it evolve. It just happened. It was like already there. He went directly from them, the nice banter in the first one, to hey, they're suddenly together. There was no struggle for that.
Well, I think some of that just comes from A, it's time passage, and B, you have those moments like the events of what happened at the end of Iron Man 1. That's going to instantly bring people closer together, and so I think that they were relying on that as being a pretty strong force that made their relationship take a jump that it wouldn't have done as quickly under normal circumstances. I guess it's not really the Stockholm syndrome, but it's something similar, something related.
And I don't know. I think I kind of disagree a little bit because I didn't feel in Iron Man 2 it was that strong. But yet, in the Avengers,
it was definitely a leap forward.
Yeah, they had a relationship.
Well, that might have been the director. I mean, Joss Whedon said he wanted to make it all about family, and they tried to get
Natalie Portman.
They tried to get her, but she was busy on some other projects.
Right.
She didn't go. And he still put her in anyway.
Right, as an image on a tablet. Yeah,
look,
right.
She's safe. But. Right. So that was Joss Whedon making sure that all those relationships continued on through the franchise.
Right. And they were understood by the audience, where it's not like hinted at, like, it's in your face. Yeah, these two are dating. Yeah.
Right, they're established relationships.
And it's always nice for a producer or director to make sure of or a writer to make sure of those things, because, a lot of sequels or, spin-offs or stuff, you get the mention that, they're still together, but You don't hear anything. There's no interaction. The person acts like they're not with someone anymore. In this one, you know, right off the bat, you see Pepper Potts and Stark sitting there when Coulson comes in, and they're together. It was pretty nice.
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me in the all the previews, Favreau. Okay. He had said when he was in charge of the franchise, when he was directing, that he wanted to avoid magic. He wanted to avoid things that weren't realistic.
Right.
And keep it more basic.
Grounded and practical.
Grounded and practical. So I'm kind of curious, because now they're introducing the extremists, and it's like, are they going to come up with a scientific explanation of why he can do this? You know, I mean, it's been explained a couple different ways in the comics, so I'm curious how they're going to handle it.
Right. From the limited amount I've read about it, it seems like they're spinning it as some sort of like genetic altering virus that basically enhances and augments things that are there, and
which I believe is the ultimate explanation for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's interesting too, because they're using the Mandarin as the main villain.
Right.
He's just a terrorist, it looks like, in the previews. He doesn't have the magic rings.
Right. He has rings, but they're just, decorative rings.
Yeah, they had the shot in the helicopter. They literally showed that on purpose. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not the first reference, though, that they've made to that in the series. Like, even in the first one, the guy that was holding Stark hostage to build that weapon, when he was in that cave, was part of an organization that was referred to as the Ten Rings, which was also a nod to the Mandarin.
Yes, and that's, I'm wondering if it's just going to be a build on that. You know, he's the leader of that organization, and that's his power base.
Could be.
You know, where that's the Mandarin gets his powers from those rings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm also kind of curious, how the their version of the Iron Patriot's going to play into this.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they're introducing that, because the Iron Patriot is not a version of War Machine at least as comics. There was a character named Iron Patriot briefly in the comics, and that was actually part of Norman Osborn's Dark Avengers team. It was actually him wearing the suit.
Yes, that's actually a pretty decent storyline in the comics too, where the villains essentially become the Avengers.
Become a hero team, yeah.
Right, and the, wackiness ensues, as it were.
Of course.
yes, and no, I mean, from what I've read trying to keep this as spoiler-free as possible, but that's hard to do. I don't even think this is official. This is just opinions online and different things.
Feel free for opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably a storyline where the government steps in and says, "Oh, well, you're a loose cannon, Stark." And since Rhodey is part of the government, let's give him a suit and make it official.
Right. And I think that's actually one of the things that Iron Man 2 did well is developing Rhodey a little further. I think Don Cheadle played that part very well.
Yes.
That transition was seamless. Like, no one really, like, obviously we knew it was a different actor, but he felt like he could be, he felt like he was in the military, but he also felt like he could be a good friend of Tony Stark's.
Right.
That relationship was stronger than it was in the first movie. But it was also clear that they were, he was basically acting as the emissary for what the military was already asking for, which was a version of the suit so that they could militarize it.
Right.
And they did that, and he ended up being the reluctant wearer of that suit just because he was, a pilot and could potentially play around with that.
Right.
So this might be an expansion on that, because before it was in Iron Man 2, there was a senator that was driving for all of that exposure to the technology.
Right, yes.
In this, we've seen these scenes in the trailers at least, of, I assume, a president, that's...
Or some high-ranking
government. Government official, but it seemed like a president giving speeches out on the lawn or in front of, wherever on podiums.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the way that they're going with this is that he sort of... that he appoints Rhodey as sort of his... chief secret service agent of sorts in the suit. And that's the reason they go with the Iron Patriot garb.
Could be.
Could be.
I also kind of wonder, is it a nod to the Captain America Avengers, you know, now that we're all tied in together.
Yeah.
Are we got, you know, is there going to be a comment about, so, you know, what do you make it look like Captain America on purpose?
Right, because it is. It's blue with a white star in the middle, just like Captain America's right. uniform. So there's definitely a homage there.
Yes. So, yeah, it should be good. It's next weekend it comes out. Though this podcast will probably be posted after it comes out.
Perhaps. Details.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess, too, like, you know, the other thing that – and it's so funny because in today's world with the previews, they have a tendency anymore to kind of get you to think it's going to go one way, and then you go watch the movie and it's something completely different.
Yeah.
And I guess everyone knows now – you know, you watch the long trailer, it's – or even in all the commercials too, it's like, you know, the Mandarin is basically giving him a choice. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning of the trailer, he's talking about Pepper being the most important thing to him.
Right.
And then the Mandarin's like, I'll give you a choice. You can either live an empty life or die a meaningful death. So it's kind of like, well, you know – logic, 1 + 1 = 2. Oh, Pepper's in trouble.
Yeah.
And he's either going to kill Pepper and he'll have a meaningless life, or he has to sacrifice himself and have a meaningful death. And it's like, okay, so.
But it's the impossible choice where he's going to try to, you know, save both himself and Pepper. And obviously it's going to work out somehow.
Well, it'll be nice if he thinks his way out of this. Instead
right.
of powers his way.
Right. Has to actually outsmart his adversary.
Right. Which would. What his shtick is, really,
yeah.
is outsmarting people.
Right. Though I do wonder, like, I don't know if you guys have been following the news, but, you know, basically Robert Downey Jr. has been coming out saying, well, I don't think I'm going to be playing Iron Man much longer. You know, he has said, like, as long as the fans believe it. But then again, the man's 49 years old.
Well, I think that the reason – I mean, yes and no. I think part of the reason that keeps coming up is because technically he is out of contract.
Yeah.
And so the media is going to jump on that. And, like, they're going to ask him at every opportunity, how long are you going to keep playing the part? And I think the truth of it is he doesn't know. But he's trying to give them some sort of answer to shut them up to an extent. And it's like, so he's, I honestly think he will play it as long as he enjoys playing it. And he said as much. And, you know, he might be saying things that may suggest he might stop playing it. And there was an April Fool's joke this year, you didn't see that? There was, where was it? I don't remember where I saw it, but basically there was a statement released or some sort of Twitter, maybe it was a Twitter released by, mm-hmm. Kevin Feige,
mm-hmm.
Saying that Robert Downey Jr. has stepped down, will not appear in Avengers 2, and they've already cast John Hamm to replace him.
Okay.
Did he say something about the codpiece? You know, it's John Hamm, so.
Yeah. No, but I just kind of wondered if that was a hint of, you know, Tony Stark's fate at the end of this movie, but again, there's also he's contracted to do Avengers 2, so as far as I know, right?
I don't know. I don't know what the contract state is. I think
I thought it was a 5-movie deal, and so Avengers 2 was part of that.
Perhaps it is. I don't know what the specifics are to that. I think he has said that he is going to play, you know, continue through Avengers 2, and beyond that is up in the air. But
right.
again, I think it's going to boil down to whether he still enjoys it.
Yes.
You know, as long as he enjoys playing the part, I think he's going to keep playing the part.
Right.
He'll be
or until, you know, I think one of the things I've read somewhere that he said is that if it ever gets to a point where the fans seem to have issue with him continuing playing the part because he's too old or because for whatever reasons, then he'll step down.
Right.
And he'll, you know, he'll retire from that role.
I don't know.
At the same time, I think he enjoys it.
I don't know that the fans would have any problem with him continuing because basically it's a part that was built for Robert Downey Jr. I mean, after all the problems he's had in his life, playing a philanthropist,
right.
billionaire, genius, it's like
– Well, it parallels it. But the funny thing is yes, he was that person.
Yeah.
But he's cleaned himself up.
Yeah.
Like he was an alcoholic, and he's come around from that. But then now he has to play one.
But not anymore. I mean, because it seems like part of the things in the trailers that they're trying to show is that he's, you know, he's like, okay, no more fooling around here.
Yeah.
Pepper Potts is my life.
Right.
And I'm getting serious, and he's having trouble sleeping because of what happened in the Avengers movie. So,
right.
You know, it's kind of paralleling his life now where, you know, he's got to grow up.
Right. Well, even in the last one, there was hints of that because he was, you know, he had cleaned up at least his diet because he was poisoning himself, you know, with the device. It was palladium.
Palladium?
I think it was palladium. Was poisoning himself with that the very thing in his chest, and so he was drinking these special shakes and basically doing whatever he could to keep himself alive and at low toxicity. So I think there's definitely that he had a bit between the events of Iron Man 1 and 2, and definitely now after the Avengers, has a much stronger sense of his own mortality. I think that's changed him as a person.
And that's one of the things from the comic books is, you know, the story of the piece of metal and it's, you know, he has this magnet in there to keep him alive so that it doesn't get into his heart and kill him.
Right.
When in the comic books there was a transition where that piece of metal comes out of him, and that's when he gets the extremis.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of feel like it was done to really get him out of the he's just a guy in a suit to he really is a superhero. Sorry about that. And now he has a power, you know, because now he can control the technology and make it come
right
to him. So maybe they're going to, you know, go that route. You know, that's maybe it's, you know, he gets rid of the piece of metal and gets the extremis. Or he injects himself with that virus to get rid of that piece of metal, and that's a side effect.
Yeah.
Well, they were going kind of that way because in Avengers, he wore that bracelet and the suit homed in on him. And in the trailers, right, you can see he's like reaching out his hand and there are pieces of
right, pieces flying onto him.
So, you know.
So he's definitely leaning in that direction of having a greater degree of control over the technology that he uses and making the application of that technology easier and easier. Like there are also scenes in that trailer of both him coming out of and getting into his armor that are much, you know, quicker than what we saw in Iron Man 1, which required the ring with, you know, that robot arm pulling pieces off individually. You know, now he's literally jumping into his own armor and then also having it deconstruct around him to let him just stand up out of it.
Yeah, but it's funny. One of the two of the coolest shots, one from Avengers, when he lands on Stark Tower and he's walking and the suit's being pulled off of him as he walks.
Yeah.
And then I just love the scene in the trailer where, like, the building's blowing up around him and the pieces are flying onto him.
Right.
You know, that's a really cool shot. I can't wait to see that on the big screen.
I've heard, actually, that with that technology, that's something he's working on in the beginning to middle part of the movie. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a point where that fails him. And
okay.
So there's a fight sequence where he has one gauntlet and one boot. And
okay.
That's it.
That'll work. I mean, and they've done that. I mean, I've seen that done in the cartoons.
Yeah.
I've seen that done in the comics. So that would work.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, John, because you had mentioned about Robert Downey Jr. and the part was made for him, more or less. I know people that aren't Iron Man fans but love the movies because of Robert Downey Jr., because
right,
of the way he plays that character.
The character, to me, in the comics always felt a little flat. I mean, he's a genius, and he wields that armor well, but otherwise his personality always seemed a little weak to me, compared to other Marvel characters. But in the movies, he definitely comes across as a much more intriguing character.
Well, given Robert Downey Jr.'s past, he can probably sympathize with the character, and that comes through.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. You get an emotional connection with Robert Downey Jr. Because he's playing himself, more or less.
Or what he used to be, or
parts
of what he used to be.
And, yeah.
And now, and you know, unlike going along with, there was mention of typecast. He didn't want to be typecast in a part or whatever. He's like one of the least typecastable people.
Yeah.
He's not exactly method, but he's really...
No, he is an actor.
Yeah.
And he has played a diverse array of roles.
And if he plays Iron Man for another five movies, it's not like everybody's going to look at him and say, oh, there's Iron Man. No, because he's also doing the Sherlock Holmes
series. Successfully played Sherlock Holmes very well.
And you can definitely say they are two separate characters. Sherlock Holmes very much so, is not Iron Man at all. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's not...
But there is that underlying mercurial nature that carries through those two characters, at least that he carries through the interpretations of them.
Right. And maybe it's the snarky or sarcastic Maybe it's the sarcastic attitude that he brings to the part.
It could be. It could also be the way it's written. You know, true. Because that is a modernization of the Sherlock Holmes tales. They could be purposely making him a little snarkier to make him seem like less of an ass. Because I think that Holmes did traditionally come off a bit like a bit of a jerk in the books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, in the books, you know,
in the books,
Watson is always complaining about the way it's his friend, but he doesn't treat him well, you know. And I do think, right, like you said, it's a modernization. They've kind of toned that back a little bit in the movie.
Right.
Mm. But to talk to the flat character point, it's funny. Did you ever hear the story about why Stanley created Iron Man?
No, I hadn't heard that.
I mean, one of the great things about Stanley, like, if you read the biographies or see interviews with him, and he talks about when he created the characters, he tried to create environments so that the stories could kind of write themselves. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Spider-Man is a great example of that, you know.
Yeah.
But with Iron Man, it was like, I wanted a writing challenge. So, you know, you think about it, it's the 60s, there's the Vietnam War, anti-war protests all around. He said, I want to create a character who is a weapons maker, but I want to make him sympathetic. And that's when he came up with the, you know, he's got this thing that's killing him.
Right.
You know, and not only is the thing that...
As a result of an explosion that was...
Right. So not only the thing that's keeping him alive, it's also the thing that helps him give him his powers.
Right.
You know.
But it also grounds him to a purpose. Whereas before he was... you know, billionaire playboy. Now he's actually has focus.
Right, right. Yeah. So I mean, it's when you think about it that way, it works. You know, like if you're a writer and you're like, okay, I want a challenge, and you look at what's going on in the world around you, and you know, how can I make a character sympathetic to people? You know,
yeah,
it was a really good idea.
True.
So what about Gwyneth Paltrow? Now, I want to hear your guys' opinions because for some reason, every website that you go on, it's like, oh, she sucks, everybody hates her, whatever. I have no idea why.
I couldn't imagine why that is. I like her in that role, and I've liked her as an actress in general. Every actor or actress has their good and bad roles, and she is no stranger to that. There are some roles that I could have done without with her, but, you know, I can't think of what they are right now. But I think for that part, she has made that part more than it was. You know, Pepper Potts was always a constant in the life of Tony Stark and Iron Man, traditionally in the comics. But she was essentially an assistant. She was a Betty Brant. She was not a leading role.
Right.
And through the writing as well as through the acting, that role has come to be a role model in and of itself. She is a... You know, while she is not number one in Stark Industries, she's a powerful player, and she's angling, you know, to take control of it and keep things on the rails. She's the responsible one. She's always been the counterpoint to Tony Stark's, you know, philandering ways and keeping things honest and on the rails.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, if you look at also... Like you said, who Pepper Potts is in the comics and even how she's been presented in some of the cartoons. I think Gwyneth Paltrow was what a great choice for that role, especially the personality she brings to it. She does a great job. I think, though, now let's take out of the comic books and go into Hollywood. Okay, first off, when you have a man and a woman in a movie together, people want the love interest, right? So, I mean, that's something that really was created in the movies.
Right.
You know, there was never a love between the two of them. I mean, maybe a little bit, you know, here and there, but nothing. You know, he's a playboy. You know, he's a playboy in the comics. You know, and it's so funny because, you know, a lot of people compare Iron Man to Batman, but the difference is Batman pretends to be a playboy, where Tony Stark really is a playboy, you
right.
know, and it's always been one of the adult pieces in that comic. But that being said, you know, I think maybe a lot of the hate comes from, okay, now we're making her a love interest. And again, I think it worked well. It worked in the movies, and she did a great job with that aspect in the role, but she's not Black Widow, the actress.
Scarlett Johansson.
She's not a Scarlett Johansson. Like, I'm not saying Gwyneth
Paltrow. Right, she's Paltrow not an action star.
Right. But I'm also not saying that, I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow is attractive, but, you know, she's not up on that high level. And I think people look at that, too. They go, yeah. He's a billionaire. He's a playboy. He can have any woman he wants. Why would he want Pepper?
And it's right. Like, she's not a femme fatale. She's not, you know, the typical Tony Stark groupie type. She's a normal level,
yes.
you know, beautiful, you know, that you'd see around the office kind of person.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so funny because, right, when you look on the message boards, that's another thing. People, like, right away when they talk about casting roles, they go, does this person look right? Does this person look like the drawings from the comic book? And it's like, drawings from the comic book, number one, a lot of times are based on who are famous actors of the time.
Yeah.
You know, because you're trying to draw a person. You can't just make up a face from nowhere. You have to think of what's this person going to look like in real life.
Right.
But also, it's like, I mean, I think that's ridiculous. You know, it should be about what is their acting ability, you know, and she brought the, you know, she brought it. I mean, she did a great job. I have no issues at all with her role.
Yeah, plus, in the second movie, she really, you know, came across as a strong-willed woman.
Yes.
I mean, she was not second fiddle to anybody, especially after he signed over the company to her, and she was basically telling him, hey, get out of here. go away.
And exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, she was a strong character and strong enough, right, where you believe, yeah, he'll sign the company over to her. There was no question in your mind about it, you mm-hmm. know? So, yeah, you're right. I don't understand the hate. I don't know, you know, and maybe hopefully with this one people's opinions will change because, I mean, obviously the story is going to revolve a lot around their relationship and, you know, if people are still hating on her by the time this comes out, they're not going to like the movie.
Yeah, well, screw them.
Yeah.
Screw you haters.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely interested to see, like, there's definitely in the trailer, there are some hints at some really interesting action with the tech that they're evolving here. Like, not only the stuff we've already talked about of how they're evolving his own suit and how it applies itself, but, you know, there's if you've seen all the trailers, there's at least one where you see Pepper Potts in the armor.
Right.
Which, you know, upon Tony's direction. And there's also that end scene that they premiered with the Super Bowl where you see all of those alternate suits of armor flying into action and coming into the fray.
Right. And
presumably and, unpiloted.
Right. You know, and for those listening, these are well-established points from the comic books. They're not inventing this for the movie. I just think it's cool that we're going to actually get to see these ideas in the movie.
And I don't know about the comics because I haven't kept up. Yes, I'm bad. But
there's the door, sir.
Yes. But the animated series, animated series, they played all those things. There's the relationship with Pepper Potts and Tony Stark. There's the she gets her own suit. Just before they finished the series. So, you know, and Extremis. I mean, all these things, they seem to be becoming canon now.
Yes, yes. Yeah, her in the suit, the character's known as Rescue.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. I was trying to think of what that was. I knew that there was a name for it, but I couldn't recall what
it was. Right, yeah. It's not Iron Maiden.
Not Iron Maiden.
Yes, please don't refer to her as Iron Maiden. It's Rescue. Read a comic book, people. I do see that on the message boards. It's like, no.
As much as they want it, no.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's we're at 28 minutes, guys, so we can wrap this part of it up. And for everyone listening, this is not going to be posted by itself. The three of us are going to go see Iron Man. And then the second half of this episode, we're going to talk about our reactions to it. So we can't promise that in that half there won't be any spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, you might want to turn this off. go see the movie and then listen to the second half. You know, we'll know more after we see it. But yeah. For now, I'm warning you guys, there'll probably be spoilers coming up.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we'll want to talk about some of the scenes of awesome Iron Man action.
Yes.
And if after this all you hear is us gurgling in the background in a fit of, you know, just complete and utter hysteria,
then you'll know they did a good job. Go see the movie. Yeah. It's the best endorsement we can give.
All right.
Seen Iron Man 3.
Sorry.
We're only a week late, that's all.
Well, it was worth it. Kind
yes.
of.
Yes. Kind of.
Yeah. Well, let me start with, I can't believe Zimmer ruined another movie with his freaking music. No, I'm pretty sure he didn't do this one.
No, this was not a Zimmer.
But, it was, all right, well, let's put this, anybody listening to this now? There are spoilers. There are lots of spoilers. Right. There are copious
spoiler
amounts
heavy.
Of spoilers.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
We'll talk about details. Yes.
Everything
so
is a spoiler.
If you don't have... want to know, stop now. Go see the movie and come back after.
Yeah, exactly, because you cannot talk about this movie without spoiling it. That's
right.
Pretty much how it works at this point.
We're going to spoil every movie over the entire summer right here, right now.
Right. Tune in.
Tune in. Tune in if you like to be spoiled. So, yeah, my gut reaction after the credits rolled was it was the best of the three. It was well worth the wait. It was really well done. And then I thought about it, like, 2 days after I saw it, and I started getting a little irritated by some of the things that were done in the movie.
There were some inconsistencies and things like that.
The one was the portrayal of the Mandarin.
Right.
I thought that was an
interesting twist, because I think that it actually is somewhat more believable, and I think they pointed that out there, that it's, you know, in real life, if you are one of these characters, if you are a Saddam Hussein or a Bin Laden or a Gaddafi, you paint yourself as a target. So In this case, he didn't want to paint himself as a target, so he created one. He created a false target.
And when we say he, we don't mean the Mandarin, we mean AIM.
Right.
Because we haven't mentioned AIM.
No, we haven't mentioned
which is a spoiler. No.
So.
We said there's lots of spoilers here.
Yes. So should we summarize the movie for those who, let's assume people have seen it.
Yes.
So people know what happened.
Right. Or if they're listening, they want the spoiler, so.
Right. So assuming you've seen it, you know what we're talking about. So we, Alder Killian, turns out to be the true bad guy. Mandarin being just a prop, being a false face to the activities that he's doing to cover them up and allow him to get funding for continuing his ideas, which I thought was rather clever, rather brilliant, and on their part. And unfortunately, on my part, that was spoiled a bit. I kind of knew that walking into the theater, but I don't think it ruined my experience with the movie.
Right. And it's funny because it's, to me, even up until the point of the reveal, I still kind of thought the Mandarin is the main bad guy. And I believe that's where Marvel's marketing genius was in this. Like, you know, unless you've read spoilers online, you go in there thinking, okay, he's fighting the Mandarin. The Mandarin's this badass terrorist. He's going to kill all these people. He's going to take Iron Man down, give him this choice. He can live a empty life or have a meaningful death. You think there's going to be this big pivot scene in the movie, and
I don't think that line was even in the movie.
No, I don't believe it was. And you get to that pivotal scene. There's a scene where Tony Stark is on his own without the armor. Spoiler, and he breaks into the Mandarin's palace, and it's probably the most kick-ass scene in the whole movie. And you're like, yeah, and you're cheering. And he breaks in and he gets to the Mandarin, and we find out that
he's some snarky British actor.
Yes, he's not even a terrorist. He's not even a bad guy. He's a hired hand. And, you know, you're sitting there watching the scene and you're like, this is a trick, though. He's tricking Tony.
Right.
You know, wait, this... No, he's going to...
oh, no, he really is just a drunken British actor.
I had the same thing. I was waiting for him to turn around and just, like, slam Tony. And he never did, because he really was what he was portraying, which was just some down-on-his-heels actor that got hired to play the part of the Mandarin.
Right.
So.
But it was... But it was a fun ride the entire time, you know, and then after that he confronts the real bad guy, who is Aldrin Killian, and he calls himself the Mandarin, which I think was a nice tie-in. And if you watch the movie, a lot of the powers he ends up having in the movie, again spoilers because of the extremist virus, are very similar to some of the powers that the Mandarin has in the comic books.
Some, although I think that he was probably a better parallel to Fin Fang Foom than he was
this is
to
true.
The Mandarin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than the fact that he wasn't literally a dragon.
Right.
But I've got to tell you, as a certified fanboy, I'd like to say that you notice that at one point the British actor said, oh, and, you know, a little plastic surgery tube and whatever. I am serious that if anybody who's writing the next script right now, because there's got to be an Iron Man 4 out there somewhere, somebody's thinking about it, it's got to be the Mandarin coming back, the real Mandarin, showing up going, okay, nobody wears my face, nobody calls them me, that's me, and then go into town with the actual Ten Rings, which, the organization of which we've heard, the Ten Rings organization has been
Ten
around
Rings
since...
Ten Rings came up in the first one as the organization that terrorist guy was part of.
Yeah. And it could be played by the same actor who played the actor.
This is
because
true.
It's just, supposedly he got plastic surgery. They didn't say what he got plastic
surgery
to look about.
They didn't get specific about it. Yeah, it was just sort of thrown out there.
No, and I think that's another brilliance on their part. They left it open where they could do something like that. They could bring him back as an actual terrorist or an actual villain in another movie. But again, the other thing with the way the movie ends, they did a great job of wrapping everything up, and you get a sense of finality in the movie.
Yeah, they definitely tied a bow on it with the, Pepper gets fixed, he gets fixed. They didn't really show Pepper in the aftermath.
Right.
I assume that by fixing her, he sort of neutralizes the extremists that's in her to some degree.
Right.
Though it could technically still be active and just not volatile. I don't know. They didn't really address that. But he has the shrapnel removed from his chest and essentially doesn't need the electromagnet in his chest any longer.
Right.
Though I think that the one issue I have with that is he had a rather big hole in his chest for quite a while. That seems like something that would take a while to heal over.
Well, we kind of assume that if originally they could not get rid of the shrapnel because they couldn't operate because it was too close to his heart.
Right.
So if they're operating, you're assuming they took some form of the extremis in order to keep it healing while they were taking it out of him.
Possible.
Something.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a hole that was about 3 inches in diameter across, and easily, based on the previous movies where we saw it,
Pepper put her whole hand inside.
At least, 3 or 4 inches deep.
Right.
To get through his chest to his heart.
As an Iron Man fan, I want to believe that when he cured Pepper, he fixed the extremis virus and gave it to him and perfected it and gave it to himself.
Yeah.
And now we have the version of Iron Man from the comics who has those abilities.
But the comics now, okay, I don't know the comics as well as you two, but I go with the animated.
I haven't read the extremis comic.
Well, the animated everything, as far as I've seen, extremis. For him, wasn't the fire breathing super strong?
No, that's true.
It was the connection with his armor.
Right,
right.
But he did that through other means. He had that going from the very beginning of this.
Well,
movie.
And they
sort of.
The
face mask still wouldn't list to him.
Yeah,
they do say it actually in the movie about controlling technology. There was a comment about the extremis fires controlling technology in the movie that they don't actually show that. So I kind of think, because they show it just as a healing virus.
Right, right.
But I kind of think, like, maybe there was a part of it that wasn't developed that Tony,
perhaps.
They say that he figured it out one night drunk.
Yeah.
So.
Right. I mean, it didn't figure it out completely. It was something that whatever her name is. I can't think of her name right now.
Very minor character.
Yeah. But had figured it out mostly, but it wasn't stable. And he gave her a way to stabilize it when he was drunk.
Yes.
So yeah, applying his brain to it sober, you know, he probably could come up with a much more complex and elegant solution to it. The one issue though I have, at least as far as the extremis was depicted in the movie, is so one of the factors of it is it can heal old wounds and even help you regrow limbs.
Right.
You know, you see that with the one woman who was one of the henchmen, who in the tapes before when she's being injected, she's missing half of her arm. And
right.
And also, which helps you understand the vice president's motive to being part of it, because his daughter's missing part of her leg.
Right.
But that same woman, you know, she also has like burn scars or some sort of scarring on her face.
And it didn't do anything.
And that didn't go away. You would think that if the extremis is that powerful that it can help you regrow an entire limb, then any scarring you have of any kind should have been healed. So that,
right.
To that same token, tattoos shouldn't stick around either. And And Aldrich had some pretty.
I kind of wondered if, and that's the thing. I don't know all the characters from the Iron Man universe, and I'm wondering if she was a specific character they were throwing in there without really saying who she was.
Yeah.
Because it's the only reason they, like you said, she had scarring on her face. It makes no sense.
Right. Her character,
other than,
from what I looked into that after, is Ellen Brandt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she is a minor character related to that stuff, but I couldn't find any depictions of that character that showed any, like that scarring was part of who that character was.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
And the actress doesn't have that scarring naturally. That was, you know.
Right, that was makeup.
So it's easily something they could have not had in those scenes.
Right.
So,
you know, breaking the movie apart and breaking it down into different things, I think, like I said, overall, I still think it was the strongest of the three movies. And you guys can agree or disagree with that.
I think it was definitely strong. I liked the first one just because it's a good character build for Tony Stark. You see that, you know, him come from being that, you know, millionaire playboy to sort of coming into accepting, you know, this new role, taking life more seriously. And not to say that growth stopped there. The growth has been continuing through
right.
these movies. You know, it continued through Iron Man 2, and you saw the cap of it in Iron Man 3. Which he encapsulated well towards the end,
right.
That saying that Iron Man was a cocoon, and he's finally now.
Right. No, and that's you know. And that's again. I think that's also part of why I thought it was so strong. There's a character arc through all, and
yeah.
even it's tied nicely in with the Avengers. It's not like they did the
right.
Avengers and said, "Oh, let's not pretend that existed." Like,
right. As a matter of fact, I think they nodded more to that than they nodded to the previous Iron Man movie.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, in the beginning, they did have they showed him, you know, half meeting that one guy in Switzerland that was featured in Iron Man 1.
Right.
That he was in the cage with.
Johansson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of the plot devices in this, like his whole anxiety thing, was driven by the events in New York. They kept alluding to those events in New York where he had to fight the Chitauri.
Right. Now, that being said, again, feeling it was the strongest, there were parts of the movie I felt were underdeveloped. They could have done a little more. Now, I understand Iron Man 2 focuses a lot on his and Rhodey's relationship,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't really need to delve too much into it, but Rhodey felt like such a side character in this one. It was kind of sad. Like,
yeah.
You
and,
know?
Yeah,
and they even...
Perhaps there was more development that we didn't see that didn't make it into the cut. But yeah, he was sort of he was not unimportant to the movie, and I actually liked some of the scenes he was involved in, and there was some interesting comedy that came from some of that.
No, and
but yeah, you're right. He was kind of a minor sidekick character. He
right.
didn't play a big role.
Yes, and speaking of that, I just found out, and I told you guys earlier today, that the original cut of the movie was 3 hours and 15 minutes. And
yeah.
They cut it down to 2 hours. So perhaps some of that stuff was in that hour and 15 minutes that was cut out. And once the special edition Blu-ray comes out, we'll be able to see that.
Right, and perhaps some of that was that whole rebranding effort, like seeing the whole War Machine to Iron Patriot transition.
Right.
We might have seen more of that in some of those cuts.
Yeah, given how they brought Iron Patriot in,
yeah, I mean, sort of, here he is.
Yeah, and it didn't really feel necessary to me.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, it was recent in the comic books they created Iron Patriot. It's not a character that I even think is still around.
No, it was.
They've ended the whole dark.
It was a very short term character. It was an outcome of the state's initiative to have all these different teams that, you know, that allowed Norman Osborn to even be part of any superhero initiative.
For those
scraping the barrel, this is very delving into the Civil War.
I was going to say, for those listening who aren't familiar with the comic books, there's a Civil War storyline where the heroes fight each other. Afterwards, the government steps in and says they take a state's initiative where they're controlling.
Right. It starts with a registration initiative. They want everyone to be, all powered people to be registered, and any use of their powers to be controlled and managed by the government. And they start this state's initiative, so there's essentially an Avengers team per state.
Right, and Norman Osborn is able to become the leader of a team,
right,
and
as a reformed version of himself.
Yeah, as a reformed criminal, and he creates his own team, and he takes one of Iron Man's suits, paints it red, white, and blue like Captain America, and the Iron Patriot was born in the comic book.
Right, and the team that he structured in general, which I think was called the Dark Avengers.
Yes, the Dark Avengers.
Every single character in that was some dark farce parody of
evil version of
right. actual, you know, Avengers characters. I forget what all of the equivalents were.
Spider-Man, which was the Venom.
Right, so they had Venom in there.
Did they have Red Hulk in there too? Or
no, Red Hulk has been around, but I don't think he was directly involved in that particular team. I think they had someone else sort of filling that role.
And then there was I can't remember. It was a evil version of Wolverine, basically.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah. But anyway, yes. So, like, that was a big, long, complicated history, ladies and gentlemen, for Iron Patriot. And then they just kind of threw him in.
As an alternate version of the War Machine.
War Machine in this. And it's like, there really wasn't a need for that.
I was okay with it. I thought it painted the story they were going for, that the president felt that this was a useful character in helping paint a strength where they couldn't find one. You know, it was a reaction to the Mandarin stuff. This was a threat that they weren't sure how to deal with. They couldn't isolate it. They couldn't pin it down. So, you know, rather than look weak and you know, not able to deal with it, they said, let's put a good face forward and let's take this, you know, initiative we have, this soldier that we have access to, and let's make him look better in the public eye as the icon for bringing the Mandarin to justice.
Right, and it was a good part of the War Machine arc as well, given the events of Iron Man 2 and how that all came about. But it just felt, because of the way the movie was cut, it kind of felt like it was thrown in, and I kind of wish...
Well, there might be more on the cutting floor. Like you said, there might be a whole hour of stuff sitting there.
Yeah.
True.
Though, so, and I think, as we mentioned earlier about Gwyneth Paltrow, I thought, again, she was very strong in this one.
Yeah, I thought I liked her character, her depiction of this. I think that was she played an important role, and I think she played it well.
Yeah.
I'd be absolutely sure that there's stuff on the cutting room floor with her interaction with the woman who created Extremis.
Yeah.
Because there was some interplay going on there in the car and then at the hotel room, and there's probably more to it than that.
Yeah, and that stuff I would definitely want to see, because that's a character I really felt like she was just there to move the story along with.
Yeah, Maya.
Maya, that was it. Very
honest.
You know, the botanist. Yeah, I mean, it was almost a very weak character. They could have had Aldrich create Extremis and then build it on that. But, you know, and when you think of the movie as a whole, yes, you needed her to move the story along. but they could have found other ways to do it. She just felt like a very flat character to me. I don't know.
Well, it would have been very funny if Tony slept with what's his name and then left him. And that's the reason why I came after him 15 years later. So
he was.
It could have worked.
He was very drunk in those times.
And yes, and you know,
maybe not true. That discriminating. he did like blondes.
Yes. Tony likes the boys. Oh wait. Yeah.
So, I didn't detect any major plot holes, you know, and although it was kind of frustrating at the end where he's got, like, what, 50 suits of armor flying around and can't seem to keep one on him for the life of him, you know? It was,
well, I think that's a testament to the Extremis itself is very powerful. Like, it was an equally matched battle. But I think also we discussed the problem with, like, the armor suits themselves are getting struck down pretty easily.
Yes.
And I think some of that is tantamount to the fact that they aren't as powerful without someone inside of them to give them that core.
Well, and some of them weren't made to be powerful. Like, the stealth armor was never supposed to be powerful.
Right.
But then the Hulkbuster armor should have been kicking ass and taking names. So.
Fair enough. Although that wasn't technically the Hulkbuster armor.
That yeah, was, I know. It wasn't big enough.
Yeah, that was construction, you know, assist type yeah. armor suit.
Yeah, actually, I think there was some strong imagery in the movie that if you weren't really thinking about it, you know, it might have glossed over. I think one is the point that, yeah, the armor is just a suit. Without a pilot in it, without Tony in it, they're easily defeated.
Right.
He is Iron Man.
Right, because Jarvis is only an AI and isn't necessarily, right. you know, a super strong AI, you know, which you can see with the fact that it carried out the flight plan when Tony was unconscious, you know, taking him all the way out to Rose Hill, Tennessee.
Yes.
You know, without thinking twice about it, because it's just an AI. They had that flight plan. Shouldn't matter that his house just got attacked. It's not taking into account emotional...
Right, exactly.
Factors like that. And then also with, you know, all these Iron Men suits flying around, you know, in the fray, they're only so effective. They're targeting what Tony tells them to target to the extent that they can assess that. And don't question that when it comes to targeting Pepper Potts, you know, because, you know, she has that signature. And that, I think, although that I actually think was a bit of a fault, because I think Jarvis would have been
smart enough
to not target a known entity like that.
Right.
You know, because even though it could recognize the Extremis, it was reading off of to figure that out, it should also have been able to ID her as Pepper and know not to attack
Pepper. Yeah, right, because it was just the heat signatures it was reading.
Right.
Yeah, and it should have known, oh, heat signature, but biosignature is somebody I know.
Well, Extremis might have changed her biosignature, so, you know.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. But facial recognition. But it might not have been bothering to do facial recognition at that level.
But if you think about it, they do a foreshadowing with that a little bit, with the scene where Tony's sleeping, having the nightmare.
That's true.
And the armor comes into the bedroom and almost kills Pepper.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As in to say, well,
he's having a nightmare.
It doesn't matter if this is a friend or not. If I think you want me to kill it, I'm going to kill it.
Yeah. I did like, one of the things I enjoyed was some of the hand gestures he had programmed with the armor.
Yeah.
Like, in that particular scene where the armor is attacking Pepper, when he wakes up and realizes it, he does this, you know, almost like a sword slash move with his hands, and that causes it to just fall apart. Obviously, no one can see my hand gestures in our podcast.
Maybe we'll get a camera one day.
And no. You can stop stalking us.
But, and, you know, just that he had thought these things through and had these different, you know, hand gestures in mind for all these different factors and how the suit would react.
You know who really thought these through? Those Kinect developers for when they come out with the game for Xbox.
We'll probably see a lot of those come through in the game.
There's one thing that does annoy me during the big battle at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of the Yamato gun... Voltron syndrome there. As soon as he said, you know, take out anybody with the virus, you should have seen 50 unibeams just wiping the walls with everything in sight.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's the fight on Air Force One where he shoots the one guy with the unibeam and, you know, kills him. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so they, as long as, I guess they're trying to say, as long as the vital organs are destroyed, they can't heal from it, maybe. But, yeah. But at the same time, then it's like, okay, so then why did, was it such a long fight at the end?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that actually does bring up a good point. I mean, if this extremis virus was suitable to help a plant heal, which has no central nervous system, that has no vascular system per se, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't have these vitals that we have, you yeah. know, but it still can react to that damage and repair itself, you know, with this virus, then because it's on a genetic level, it's not on a, you know, biochemical level, it doesn't rely necessarily on the brain to work.
Right.
Or it shouldn't. Although the way that Aldrich presented it to Pepper, it almost seemed like there was a brain-body connection key to its functionality.
Yes.
But yeah, along those lines, that even with the unibeam to the chest, you know, on the cellular level, that repair should have still been feasible.
No,
But yeah. perhaps the argument there is that even if it is feasible, brain death is brain death.
Yeah.
Right.
So even if it repaired, there may actually, and that might have been an interesting exposition to see, like, if he completely repaired, but still was dead because he was brain dead.
No, that's true, because, you know, I mean, I guess they needed a way to end that fight.
Yeah.
But, right, no, they didn't. They never explained how powerful it was in the movie. They never
right.
say, oh, you know, yeah, it'll heal you, but only to a certain point. Like, because in the scene with the Mandarin Theater in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah,
Chinese theater, and they blow it up, you know. There's that explosion, and the one of the henchmen is there, and mm-hmm. he walks away from it, and it's like, well, but everyone else was vaporized.
Yeah, but not everyone was vaporized.
Not everyone, no.
And I think that what they were sort of illustrating there is both Happy mm-hmm. and Savin is the name of that particular
okay.
henchman. I've seen it twice now, so I'm sorry I don't remember the names. Both of them survived the blast. I think part of it, you know, Savin survived because he had that repair ability, and Happy because I think he was just far enough outside the blast radius or had some
he was
shielding,
behind
something
too.
Right, something
yeah.
that was,
he was
blocking,
behind a bar or something.
Right, to allow him to live through it. Obviously, he had to go to the hospital, but wasn't vaporized. And I would imagine that Savin was also in that state where he was either partially occluded by something or far enough outside that he wasn't vaporized instantly. He had layers of skin stripped off of him,
right.
and obviously had his foot like sheared at some level because you see his part of a foot as he's walking away.
Broke
down,
yeah.
But yeah, he wasn't close enough to the blast to be.
Yeah, it doesn't matter the healing factor you've got because as they proved in they had it in the end of Wolverine. They shot him in the brain, and the parts of the brain that got scrambled had, you know, part of his memories never returned.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you shoot one of those extremist guys through the brain, or unibeam through the brain, you could grow another brain, but it's not going to have
the
memories, you're
not
going to have the personality, the guy will just sit there and...
Right.
You
regrow empty cells or empty cells.
I do think there must be some level of immunity that they have, because they also show the scene from the test footage that he unlocks using War Machine's login. There's the one scene where you see the one guy go nuclear, you know, while they're injecting them, you know,
right.
while they're doing the initial injections. And the girl, Brandt, is in that set of people in that room.
Right,
she
survives.
Obviously she survives, yeah. And I don't think they could have cleared everyone out of that room in the matter of seconds.
Right.
I think they only cleared the technicians but left the participants in the room because they could survive through it.
No, that's
or they didn't care.
But that's an excellent point. You know, I think they did, and I did think they did a good job in a lot of different scenes like that to make it more believable. You know, to
yeah.
say, well, she survived, so yes, they must have some level of
immunity
right.
Yeah.
All right, so we're at about just about a half hour. So, final thoughts, John. What was if you were going to give it a rating, let's pick a rating. Let's say one to five.
Well, first let me say that I'm very happy that they, you know, tied up the loose ends so well at the end, you know, especially that last bit after all the credits that said Iron Man will return. Yeah. Even though we watched him destroy every piece of armor he had.
Right. By the way, did you stick around for the post-credits scene?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay.
It's a required thing with a Marvel movie.
It is. Yeah. And I thought they did. That was a fun one.
That was hysterical. Yeah, it's Garofalo and Dave.
Yeah, the post-credits Ruffalo. Scene doesn't...
Ruffalo.
Sorry, Ruffalo. I don't know why I've got some
Doesn't foreshadow any other movies. Like, I thought maybe it'd be a foreshadowing to the new Thor movie or foreshadowing to Avengers 2, but no, it's just a fun little scene.
Yeah, ties it up. Because it fits with the intro he's talking, you know, talking about the event, so as if the whole movie was in past tense.
Right.
And then at the end, you know, it bookends it very nicely.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yeah, if you didn't stay for the after credits scene,
Go back and see it again.
And if it's too late to see it again by the time you listen to this podcast, I'm sure it's on YouTube. It's very funny. You should check it out. So,
final thoughts. I like the idea of him going through the whole thing on his mind and not a bunch of, you know, do ex machinas from his suit of armor. So I'd give it a 9. You know, I like
9 out of 10 capes.
I like that.
With the exception of at the end, you should have just seen 50 unibeams, wipe out everything in front of them. That should have been...
My only argument to that is maybe it happened, you just didn't see it, because they focused on the action with Tony. So it may have been going on around there, you just weren't seeing much of it. Because obviously they took out those people. Like, there was, dozen of them at least, you know, maybe more. So they probably did a lot of... There was probably some level of unibeaming, but who knows? Or maybe Jarvis doesn't have the protocols for that.
Okay.
So, Ben?
I'd also give it a 9 out of 10 capes. I saw it, and I've seen it twice. I saw it once with one of my best friends who's huge into comic stuff, and with my mom, and both of them loved it. And then I also saw it this weekend with my kids and my wife, and they all loved it as well. So it's definitely, you know, I'm not as strict enough fanboy to care that they departed from the Extremis storyline as it was in the comics. I felt it was a well written story, and I think that it capped that trilogy well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. 9 out of 10 capes. I don't think I have felt. I haven't felt that fun of a ride in a movie in a long time, with maybe the exception of the Avengers.
There was a lot of humor too.
It was an enjoyable ride from beginning to end. They did a very nice job of giving you the feeling that if this was the last one, they could end it there, and I think a lot of people would be happy. If you're an extreme fanboy who is on the internet making comments saying how much you hate it, I know a lot of you are out there because I've seen them. Just go back into the movie and forget about the comics for a second and just enjoy the movie, because it was really good. It was a well worth it. You know, go see it again.
Yeah.
And John finally saw it, so maybe him and I'll go see it again.
There you go.
All right. Well, on that note, everyone, enjoy the rest of your week, and don't let your cape get caught in the door. Bye.